bullet pinged off the cable scant inches from his left hand, sending up a shower of red dust. Abe's weight was making the bridge buck and sway, the middle section already dipping below the surface of the icy water. Through the paralyzing terror, the knowledge came faintly to Abe that he was going to die. If he moved forward, then the whole structure would collapse and tumble him into the nameless river. And if he stayed where he was, then he would inevitably be shot, his body falling into the rapids. He saw another burst of fire from the Armalite and a frantic wave of the hand from Traitor. Abe knew that his old leader was quite capable of shooting him if he didn't do like he'd been told. And it was that certainty, more than any other gut-rending fear, that made Abe begin the crossing. The swaying redoubled, until Abe feared the bridge was going to swing completely upside down. Gray stone, white water, and pewter sky all rolled and merged. But Abe gritted his teeth and battled onward, a careful step at a time, his knuckles white with the strain. A freezing sensation around the ankles made Abe hesitate, until he realized he was nearing the center, where the water boiled over the missing slats. If the enemy were still shooting at him, then he was no longer aware of it. Did he hear the cry of blood for blood that had been haunting them since the killing in the hamlet in the hills? Was it still the posse? Time had ceased to exist for Abe. He remembered that one of the slats had parted like a whisper, and he dropped through the gap, one hand slipping, skin tearing from his fingers, blood dripping, watery, down his wrist. He hauled himself up by the other hand, soaked above the waist, trembling with shock. He reached the middle, where the tug of the river was like a fierce embrace, trying to suck him down into the gray-green pools. It reached to his groin, chilling Abe to the heart, while he hauled himself along the cutting wires, feeling for a footing below him. He glimpsed Traitor, crouched behind the tumbled walls of the hut, keeping up covering fire, pinning down their attackers, if any of them showed themselves. Abe didn't even realize that he was crying, and the soaking from the tumbling meltwater concealed the fact that he'd pissed himself. And then he was across.
"Reckon they'll take their time coming down after us."
Abe was flat on his back, cold and wet, fumbling with his clawed and frozen fingers as he tried to reload the Colt Python, dropping shells in the dirt.
"Can we wreck the bridge?"
"No."
"Why?"
"Checked it as I came over."
"And?"
Traitor straightened, and the Armalite snapped again.
"God, missed a son of a bitch. His fucking spray makes it bastard difficult to shoot well."
"What about the bridge?"
"What the? Oh, yeah. The middle part's rotted as shit landed back again. But the mainstays are better than they look. If we had some plastics, we could blow it."
"We could wait here, Traitor."
"Why?"
"Hold the ridge, chill them when they come down after us. What do you reckon?"
"At short-term thinking, partner. Man who looks 5 minutes ahead gets wasted by the man who looks an hour ahead."
"Seems like a good idea to me."
Abe was aggrieved by the dismissal of his plan, though he was real pleased with the unexpected partner from Traitor.
"We're shitting in their backyard, Ryan. Abe. They know this place and we don't. Could be a back double around the top of that canyon. Bring some of them down on top of us while the rest hold us here."
"So?"
"I'll be hung, quartered, and dried for the crows. I swear I never met anyone with so many fuck-stoop questions as you, Abe. We go up, of course."
The moment of delight in the term partner hadn't lasted very long for Abe. The weather grew worse, with the sky darkening as though it were about to unleash a storm of biblical proportions. The wind rose, lashing the foaming water to a greater turmoil, while clouds of misty spray rose to fill the gorge. As soon as Abe had recovered his breath and his nerve from the crossing of the bridge, Traitor began to lead the way up the narrow, rain-furrowed path that clung to the face of the cliff. There was still an occasional shot fired in their general direction, but none of the bullets came within 50 yards of them.
"Wasting lead.
He said they'd stop chasing us."
"Thought they would. These could be compadres of the couple by the hut."
"And then again, they could be that bastard posse on our asses from back yonder."
Traitor didn't bother to reply, striding onward and upward with the vigor of a man a third of his age. Gradually, the ceaseless roaring from the turbulent stretch of the falls began to fade away beneath them. Abe felt the muscles at the back of his calves beginning to tweak with the remorseless pace that Traitor was setting, and he leaned forward, pushing with his hands on his thighs to try to help himself over the worst parts. His His heart pounded, and the breath rasped in his chest. Abe licked his lips, tasting salt and cold iron. A tight band was squeezing around his temples, and he felt a sudden urge to stop and throw up. The track was so old and faint that earth slips had washed it away in several places, necessitating a muddy and slippery clamber up over a dangerous detour across bare dirt and rock. Finally, the shooting had stopped. The track wound away from the river, cutting toward the east, up a side canyon.
Once we get over the ridge, we'll have an ace on the line to get away.
Long as they haven't second-guessed us!
Abe wasn't sure the traitor had heard him. Truth was, he hoped that the man hadn't. It was raining, a steady downpour, lancing vertically from the dark clouds, seeking out every gap in their clothes. Abe had it running down his nose and inside his collar, both at the back and the front. There didn't seem an inch of his body that wasn't sopping wet. It had also become colder. Trader was moving ahead, the gap between the two of them widening. Every time there was a sharp bend in the trail, the older man vanished for almost half a minute. Abe had heard about the cold sickness, something that insinuated itself into the marrow of your bones and froze your blood and dulled your mind. He knew that one of the first signs of that was fatigue, a terrible weariness that dragged at your feet and made every step seem like 10.
Traitor! Hey, traitor!
But the gray man didn't hesitate or check for a moment, striding on around the next turn in the track.
Get a fire going. It's what I need most. I dry myself and get warm and I'll be fine then. Fucking fine with a good blaze to heat me up.
A small carved sign under an overhang, protected from the elements, read, Quarter Mile to Hotel.
Oh, sounds good.
Around the next bend, Trader was so far ahead of him that he wasn't even in sight. For the first time, dimly against the skyline, Abe thought he could make out the tumbled ruins of a building, presumably the hotel that the sign referred to. Abe slogged on, face down against the driving rain, stumbling in the deep ruts that crisscrossed the trail, hoping the Trader would be in sight when he reached the top. But he wasn't. Abe was greeted instead by a small group of bedraggled men with muskets.
Blood for blood, you bastard. You're a fucking dead man.
Dark night.
Yeah. That's not one of the damnedest things you ever did see.
The barber shop was brightly painted, all of the wooden surfaces varnished and polished. The mirrors gleamed, and the floor was clean enough to eat off.
See what you meant.
What?
About there sort of being someone in here. I see what you mean.
There were 9 figures in the single long room. 3 were dressed as barbers in blue and white striped aprons. 3 were customers, sitting in each of the mahogany and brass chairs. The other 3 sat or lounged on the padded bench that ran the length of the shop. They were all dead.
Knew what he was doing, or she was doing.
Ryan touched a finger to the cheek of the stoutest of the barbers. It felt cool and waxen to the touch, like artificial fruit. Its glass eyes twinkled with a convincing jollity, and the mustache had a spiky elegance.
Seen plenty of stuffed animals.
JB lifted the arm of a young man on the bench seat, testing it for weight and movement.
Real light.
Damnedest thing. Yeah, I've seen fish and birds and moose heads and cougar and bear, every kind of embalmed and stuffed creature in the world. But I never saw human beings.
The place was immaculate. Everything gleamed and sparkled, all dust and dirt banished. There was a beautiful sampler on the wall above the bench in a hand-turned beechwood frame. The date at the bottom was the 8th day of the 8th month in the year of our Lord, 1888, with the name of the person responsible for the embroidery, Jemima Auster, and her hometown, of Pawtucket.